Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about Wisconsin's top 10 consumer complaints for 2021 with a couple of guests for you today from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. One of them, Michael Domke. He is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michael, welcome. Good to have you with us. I think for the first time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Glad to be here.
With us as well, a veteran, I guess we could call her, of this show, Michelle Reinen. She's the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be back, and thanks for being kind.
Well, do you have a consumer concern? I hope you'll join in. What experiences have you had with telemarketers, maybe, or other problems? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And again, that phone number, 800-642-1234. Michelle, let's turn to you first. The top complaint in 2021 for Wisconsin consumers was telecommunications. And maybe you could explain what consumers were experiencing.
Yeah, and that's really no surprise that telecommunications are really telemarketing is our number one complaint for 2010, with over 2,700 complaints received, these written complaints that consumers called in, really letting us know that they are receiving telephone calls, unwanted telephone calls. Some of them are from individuals soliciting goods or services, but many of them are the telephone calls that are received about the scams that we talk about every time we're on the show, the different things that are circulating to scammers out there trying to trick you into paying for fake services, saying that your account is set to expire and you need to do a verification to keep it going. It could be the phone calls about Social Security Administration or maybe some benefits that you are set to receive that will expire, Medicare scams, the whole allotment of the different items that we discuss every time we're on, and those imposters that are out there. And though that makes up that largest category of the number one complaint that we've seen for 2021.
And that compares to, say, past years? Was it number one in 2020, for example?
It's been number one since we've had the Do Not Call list. And originally, the number one was, you know, people not complying with the Do Not Call list and businesses getting used to Do Not Call. And then it certainly morphed into all these imposter phone calls that are out there and telemarketing really making up the scam calls in those attacks to try and steal your money and your identity.
Yeah.
And it is down slightly from 2020, but, you know, not really noticeable, just about 125 to 130 calls less than, or complaints less than the previous year.
Yeah. Michael, what's a phone imposter usually like? I mean, what are they like?
Well, you touched on an interesting part. You say, what do they sound like? And the problem is they sound legitimate. Mm-hmm. So they'll either have specific consumer information and they're calling on a particular, let's just say utilities. If they're going to call you an imposter on a utility scam, they're going to know what your address is, where you live, kind of what type of services you're receiving, and make it seem like they really are calling from that company. So it would be difficult to give you some type of audible indicator to identify their imposter, because as much time as we deal with some of these particular services legitimately, they sound just like them.
Yeah, and I haven't had too many of those because I rarely answer a call. I'm warned by my phone if it's probably a fake. But once in a while, I'll pick up, and they always sound like they know really what they're talking about, and they sound very professional, at least the few that I've heard.
They do, and that's why they're so successful.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, if they don't have that pitch correct or they sound like they're a little bit disingenuous, most consumers are going to pick up on that or question it. So it's to their benefit for them to be smooth and convince you that they are.
And Michelle had mentioned the do not call list earlier. If people, you know, there are people out there who are not on that list, how do you get put on that list?
That's a great question. Just go to our website and we'll have the link that'll help you register with our organization and the federal government to get your number on there. And so the law will require any telemarketer who wants to call you to first check that list. And if you're on it, it's illegal for them to do so. So that's the best step you can take.
Yeah. And your website is?
It is datcp.wy.gov.
datcp.wy.gov. I should remember that from one month to the next, but and we'll also have that up on our website. Tyler reminds me too. So ideas at wpr.org/Larry and go to today's date. We'll have it up there along with the phone number. And let's just give that right now while we're at it, because people can always call for a number of issues relating to consumer protection. And that's 800-422-7128. 422-7128. I'm just going to put that down. All right, I got that. By the way, you can join in right now as I talk with these experts. 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. Email address ideas@wpr.org. Well, we're going down a list, and we had number one. What about number two? Something to do with landlords and tenants? Is it, Michelle?
It certainly is, Larry. And this is a very popular category year to year as well, because it's so impactful. I mean, this is where individuals live. We have many individuals who rent their housing. And so it can be incredibly concerning if they're having a conflict with their landlord or receive some kind of notice. So we received more than 1,600 complaints as it relates to landlord-tenant relations and issues. These are really those disputes between a landlord and a tenant that couldn't be resolved on their own, or a tenant may have been fearful to try and announce the conflict to their landlord and try and resolve it themselves, so they tap into consumer protection. The leading categories here about the issues are really that return of security deposit. It could be a failure to return the security deposit. It's being completely withheld by the landlord, or some dispute over the partial return. They may not agree with what has been withheld from that security deposit and think that that tenant thinks they should not have been charged for the item that they're not receiving their money back from. Other things we've heard about are a landlord failing to complete repairs that might be needed in the rental eviction rights. Lots of questions and concerns over a lease being terminated, you know, and ending an agreement that if you're not on a written lease being ended, or just eviction proceedings, especially, you know, because the pandemic has continued and rights and moratoriums and all sorts of things as to when you could evict and not evict situation. So certainly lots of complaints and confusion and questions surrounding those issues as well.
Yeah, you did mention that COVID, the eviction moratorium, and I was wondering how the heck, if that had... if that would have affected the number of landlord-tenant complaints, and that moratorium, of course, extended times, and it was extended until July 31st of 2021, if I'm not mistaken. And I think there was the CDC also put a limited moratorium in place as well.
Yeah, there was lots of movement. That time frame continued to shift because of the unknown of the pandemic. And so both parties being regularly impacted by it, and a big unknown different jurisdictions, different courts having different opinions and people proceeding with things. And throughout the year, there was rental assistance programs that were offered. You know, the RAP program through DOA was available, and we kept talking about that. And people who couldn't pay their rent going and looking and seeking those resources, because then rent would be paid directly to landlords for that. And certainly, because of the constant movement on that and shift, we received more than 65,000 visits to the landlord-tenant COVID frequently asked questions, not just our normal, you know, landlord-tenant guide and questions. And that's people who did self-help to go look at those FAQs, didn't include the number of phone calls that we received, or the visits to just our normal everyday landlord-tenant guide that's available for both tenants and landlords to look at. So lots of information that we have out there. And plus our staff can answer, you know, questions, help determine if complaints need to be followed. But this is a really impactful category. And Michael can talk about some of that in action that actually we took through investigation, because we do a lot of work in this area.
Yeah. Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. So one good example of how we can help both on the front end, as Michelle was laying out all those resources, but then as some of those follow through, one particular Milwaukee property manager we had received several complaints about, and that prompted us to dig a little bit deeper and see how widespread this issue was. And ultimately, our investigation led to the Wisconsin Department of Justice filing suit against the local Milwaukee company for several violations, including, you know, illegal provisions in the leases, illegally charging them late fees, and then charging them court fees. What they were doing is they would file eviction notices and then turn around and charge those tenants for their own eviction, you know, adding insult to injury. And then also engaging in a lot of illegal security deposit deductions that, you know, Michelle alluded to earlier as being one of our primary complaints we received. So we were able to field those complaints. And interestingly, when the Department of Justice had a press conference announcing their lawsuit, the floodgates opened. And then we received hundreds of more complaints regarding that helped us really substantiate the issue and look at, all right, how widespread is this?
Yeah. Our guests today, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Bureau of Consumer Protection with our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We have some callers online. We'll get to those, but there's a line open for you. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Courtney Everett, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Looking at consumer issues today, consumer concerns with Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Department of Division of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Again, you can call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take some calls. Vern and Nina will give you a chance. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for putting me on.
Sure.
I have an interesting story here about fraud. And as of 27th, I think, of December, I got a call. And it was I figured it was a scam call, because usually my phone cuts it off, but I do get some through. And I answered, so I didn't answer the phone. My son was here. He said, why don't you answer the phone? Because it went on my answering machine. He said, oh, you just won $3 million. I said, that's just fake anyway. So 2 days later, I get a call, the same call, exactly 2 days later on the hour. Oh, wait a minute, I just said this wrong. No, they left a number for me to call. So then 2 days later, I got this call again. So I went and called this number that they left me. And I says, I just got a call 2 days ago that I just won $3 million. I said, where's the money? Put it on. I said, bring it here.
Well, you know, it's probably kind of fun to do that, Michael, but in the end, sometimes it's not the best idea to be calling them back.
I would agree. agree with you. There's always going to be that urge to try and return the annoyance and, you know, put it back on them. But sometimes if you're not, you know, savvy and aware of what's going on, that might just be what they're looking for. And all of a sudden they can loop you into, you know, kind of that game that you're playing. And unbeknownst to you, you start having that conversation and you get comfortable and start sharing information that you never intended to in the first place. And that's exactly what they're trying to get for it.
And Michelle, isn't it also true that then they have a live, they know they have a live number there?
Yeah, you validated to them that you're willing to engage, and that can lead to more and more, and your number and information becomes more valuable on the sales market, you know, for scammers, because they certainly exchange lists and sell information to one another. And if you're someone who'll engage, that's going to have far more value than someone who just ignores, as annoying as it is. As Michael said, we just need to refrain. And Larry, certainly we've heard from one of your callers where if these scammers get upset and angry, they flip it around on you and they can be very aggressive and somewhat dangerous. And I just, you know, it sticks in my mind. It's been a few years, I think, but the story of someone who got swatted as a result, where the scammer then called the police on the individual, and the police showed up at the door. The SWAT team showed up at the door of the consumer. So it can be pretty scary.
It can backfire on you. Yeah, for sure. Vern, thank you for calling. Jerry in Prairie du Chien, we'll go to you.
Hello. Thank you for accepting my call. I have a story similar to Vern's. I made the mistake in the last 30 days answering the phone when I didn't recognize the caller ID. And, it was Publishers Clearinghouse telling me that I'd won $5.5 million. And all I had to do was send them a $500 registration fee. So I suggested to the caller that, hey, you just deduct the $500 from the $5.5 million that I already have, cut me a check, and put it in the mail. But apparently the caller didn't think that was a good idea, but we've had three calls in the last 90 days from that were winners in the Publishers Clearinghouse, and now we're up to $11.2 million. But again, I made the mistake of engaging.
Yeah. Comment there, Michael?
Well, it's interesting. Publishers Clearinghouse continues to be one of the most frequent calls that we receive on our hotline to provide assistance with, because it's so well known. I mean, I remember as a little kid when Ed McMahon was standing at the door with the big check, and Everybody's known you've got decades of promotional experience. And so it isn't odd to get one of those phone calls. But unfortunately, like any other industry, it's easily exploited, and that's how they're trying to take advantage of it.
Yeah. Jerry, thank you again for calling. And we'll take your call, too, at 800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address ideas@WPR.org, talking about the broad range of consumer concerns and complaints with our guests today, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke. They have the top 10 list. We've gotten through a couple of them, and we'll get through the whole 10, I think, by the time we're done, if not for no other reason than due to your calls, because I'm sure some of those are going to turn up. And identity theft is on the rise in Wisconsin. This was number 3 on the list, Michael. Well, how does a person become a victim of this scam?
Well, this one ties directly in with probably the number 1 in the telemarketing and those scam calls that we're talking about. And actually with, you know, what Vern and Jerry were just calling in about, and these imposters trying to pretend they're somebody else to get some of that information or get some payments coming in. And identity theft is the fastest rising type of fraud being perpetrated out there, because so much information is now being circulated, whether that's be willing or we register for so many things. And so the problem with identity theft is once that occurs, it's really, really difficult to recover from. And that's where we can help. So our agency, you know, assists with that recovery process. We try and work with the different lenders or other institutions that are now impacted by them having use your information to commit these acts. You know, two of the most popular ones that unfortunately we need to help with recently have been unemployment claims. And then certainly now we're coming up on tax season. And during the last couple of years, when, you know, there's unemployment assistance and there's other programs to assist that, that was even more of a motivator for these criminals to try and steal identity and start filing false claims or, as we'll see, you know, false tax returns. And that's why it's so damaging.
Yeah. And in terms of getting recovering or getting out of this, Michelle, what's the process like?
Well, we do a couple things. We do victim assistance that will help you navigate the waters, if you will, and who you need to contact and obtain information about it. If it's like a financial identity theft, and try and remove certain accounts from your name and look at it that way and work through that process with you. We need your cooperation and participation in that, because you have to give authorization and things. It's your identity to these businesses. But the other thing that we guide you on is what you can do yourself to protect your identity. And one of the basics is to put a security freeze on your credit report. This is a very valuable report. It's how people get loans and extensions of credit. This report also shows and identifies for you all the extensions of credit that you have, where you've rented, vehicles you own, that information. And so in addition to putting a security freeze on, which is free, and you want to do it with all three credit reporting agencies, we encourage you to check your credit report. Look at it. During the pandemic, and this is still continuing, you can get a free credit report online every week from the credit reporting agencies until April of this year. That's a special privilege that they've been doing, a special offer, if you will. It's free because of the pandemic and identity theft being on the rise. It's for online, you know, receipt only. If you do it traditionally and get it by mail, you're only eligible for the one free report from each of them per year. Regardless of how you want to get that information, you need to monitor this. Make sure no one's taking advantage using your information. And so when you get the report, actually look at it. That's what monitoring is. You don't just get it. You got to look at it and analyze it, make sure it's accurate. And if you find discrepancies, report them, call them out, let you deal with them so you can identify what's happening there. Is it truly just a reporting error, or is someone misusing your information? And you can try and get on top of the identity theft there. But the best tool is just to put the security freeze on so no one can use your information.
And so if you see something, then what do? You call that credit, or do you email or whatever, get to the first, credit agency, or what?
Right, Larry. The first step is to, they have a dispute process with their credit reporting agency, and you want to go through that process. Usually when you get your report, they tell you how to go about that if you find errors. But the second stage is to follow through. And if they don't make the correction or do the adjustment, that's where consumer protection can again come in and help assist with this. And you'd want to file a complaint, reach out to us, file that complaint so we can assist you with that process to determine. Because they need to do an evaluation, really, you know, is what the credit reporting agency is what you're telling me accurate? Because there are individuals with things on their credit report they wish weren't there. But they're theirs, and they need to own those instead of trying to get those removed. So they have to go through a review process when you're telling them something looks to be in error.
Let's take some more calls. Steve in Wausau, we'll go to you next. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I don't know if I'm just blessed with good hearing, but I assume these robocalls work in a way that he's just, whoever's calling you is sitting there watching a light board, and it's just firing out, and the first person that would answer the phone, they would push that button, and you'd be talking to somebody. Well, when they push that button or whatever they do to make that connection, once you answer your phone, I hear that, and then I just hang up. And it's time of day, of course. I pay attention to the time of day. But I've never had a relative or anybody call me and say, why did you answer the phone and hang up and say hello? So I'm just blessed with good hearing.
Okay. Well, is that true every time, Michael?
I would say is probably that type of experience is more popular than someone actually, a human being making a direct call. Oftentimes, robocalls will do exactly what Steve was talking about, and they'll send out and call numbers, and it won't actually activate to a live person until someone picks up. You know, that circles back initially when we talked about, and just answering the phone in itself might be that gateway. So I would say we're far more likely to have a computer making these auto-generated calls without a live person sitting there until they connect.
Steve, thank you for calling. Sarah in Lodi, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. I am so frustrated, as is my whole family. We cannot use our landline anymore other than to have people leave messages and we take messages off because we're having so many scam calls. And my cell phone is also just overrun with scam calls. And both the landline and the cell phone, once in a while, identify it as a probable scam. And it's frustrating. I was on the phone with our local hospital the other day, and immediately after hanging up, I got a phone call that identified itself as the hospital number, and it was a scam.
Yeah.
And that was on my cell phone. And it's, I mean, we got probably 8 calls in a row from breast cancer research. And we can't even use our phones. Don't we have the technology in the United States to somehow do something about this? We just don't, we can't even use our phones effectively anymore.
Hmm. That's frustrating, isn't it, Michelle?
It sure is. And so this is something that, you know, Sarah's asked about is, you know, what technology exists that we can stop some of this. Some of it is the method of which the call's being transacted and connected. And in December of 2019, I believe it was, certainly their legislation passed on the federal level, the TRACED Act, that said these telecommunication providers do need to put in some authentication protocol. Many use Shake and Stir. It's just one of the protocols that exist to authenticate phone numbers before they make connections to make sure that they're owned. There's some criteria that needs to be followed. Some of them have gone to the steps of labeling the number, letting it go through, but labeling it that it's scam likely or, you know, unknown number, different things. They each have their own terminology, each provider, to give you some indicator out there. And then they're hesitant to block some calls because they don't want to be blocking an emergency call type situation, but they do have the authorization or authority to do this, this blockage. So what I would encourage Sarah to do is contact her providers for those different lines and verify what authentication protocol they're using. Let them know the extent of the phone calls that she's receiving. As it relates to her smartphone, certainly, Larry, we've talked over the years about the various apps that are out there to help you identify calls that may be scam calls. And some of them update daily against the lists that the FTC put out there as known scam numbers because they're constantly turning over and generating. But I will say with landlines, that technology is old, and so the authentication protocol works. There's more issues with getting the protocols to work because of the type of technology that exists and being able to do that authentication and stuff. So that is on a slower train, if you will, in helping people. But reach out to the provider and see where they're at with implementing this and what else they can do to help you.
I was thinking back as you were talking, you know, the fact that Sarah was on the phone and then immediately thereafter, here comes another call. I had a friend who, a colleague actually, who was on with her bank and then on the phone about some stuff. And then she gets a call right away. This is the bank. We need some additional information. And it wasn't the bank. And so she had her identity. She had her bank she gave some information that created some real hassles for her and involved identity theft and some loss of money.
Yeah, I'm really glad you reminded me of that point of Sarah's call, too. One other thing to do with her smartphone, because I believe that was the phone she was on at the time, is check the privacy settings she has on all the apps. And because certain apps connect to your phone and different information and want to access different information and share it, and you don't always know clearly who's behind an app. We've certainly seen some malicious applications that are out there. And had to give reports on the show about those. So verify what authorizations, privacies you're allowing each one of these apps to connect and how you're allowing it to access other information on your phone to be sure some of this isn't happening just through that malicious aspect. And be sure your operating system is completely up to date as well to help protect with those different set levels.
So how do you do that with the app itself? Just go to the app and then within the app?
Yeah, you can look within each app at the privacy settings under, usually there's the little wheel for settings, mm-hmm. and you can go look within each app. You can also go to, on my phone, an iPhone, you can go to the settings overall for the phone, and within the privacy aspect, you can see what's all the apps that you're allowing to share information, but each phone, depending upon which type of phone you have, will have a different means of reaching that, but usually it's through your general settings to be looking at all the apps or go into the app specific if you want to vary the privacy settings because you can do some selections of what you're willing to share.
Sarah, again, thanks. Let's go to Alex in Shawano County. Alex, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. I called in late. I don't know if you talked about this, but I keep getting these bills from a local hospital clinic for the COVID vaccination. They send the bill to me, and I call them, and they said, okay, forget about it. And then a month later, I get the same bill again with the warning on the back, if you don't pay this, we'll hand it over to a collection agency. So are private clinics and hospital clinics supposed to be sending us bills for the COVID vaccination?
Well, Michelle?
So you can file a complaint with Consumer Protection and we will get it over to the Department of Health Services, Office of Inspector General. The COVID vaccine, the vaccines nationwide, they're free. And so you shouldn't be charged for the vaccine itself. You may be getting, in some cases, depending upon where you were vaccinated, a visit fee, like type situation if you didn't go to a free center. But the Department of Health Services is the one who sorts through and identifies all the criteria as it relates to the vaccine itself. Now, if you're, and I'm just going to go there for a minute, even though he didn't, as it relates to testing for COVID, that's a little different as well as to whether or not there's a fee for the test or not. However, there are tons of clinics out there on the DHS website that are administering tests for free. However, some may want to charge your insurance and need your insurance information and may need to validate who you are through looking at your driver's license. You may be charged a fee if you are trying to get an accelerated time frame because of a trip. Michael, do you want to enhance what I'm saying as it relates to the different tests? Because there's criteria, but certainly, again, we want to get those complaints if you have any about vaccine or testing to Department of Health Services, but you can do that through our office. We'll get it there for you if you don't go to their website and look up the information for filing.
Yeah. Michael, to add to that?
No, Michelle did a great job summary it up. The only thing I want to emphasize, which she clearly articulated, was the difference between charging for a vaccine and charging for a test.
And you know, in Alex's case, I think, you know, it's not one of those where you want to just ignore the bill. You know, it's supposed to be, I would file the complaint and go forward with trying to get it resolved, as opposed to maybe they actually do turn it over to a collection agency, and that's something that might, I don't know if that winds up on your credit report or not, but I think it's worth following through and actually, even though it's supposed to be free, it could wind up creating some problems, Michelle.
Yeah, and that's why it would be important to file the complaint, one, because they should, if it's the vaccine, they shouldn't be charging for it, and they're trying to. But two, you're right. We don't want to just ignore it, even though they keep telling you verbally and then it keeps appearing. You know, if they're going to resolve it, get it in writing, because if it ends up with collections, you have the documentation. Okay, we're not just dismissing this. I want the, you know, a statement saying this is cleared, or I have a zero balance, or, you know, send me an email saying we're taking care of it and here's what we're doing. But the fact that it keeps crossing and showing up, we don't want that just ignored. You know, you want some documentation and records, because it could end up in collections.
So Alex could just call you at 868-422-7128. Did I get that right?
How about 1-800-422-7128?
Well, why did I think the other? 1-800-422-7128. My mind must have been wandering around when I was writing that down again. 1-800-422-7128. I now
sounds great.
Have it correct. Alex, good luck. Thank you for calling. Mark in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for the show. I was wondering if you can explain, like, how would you go about freezing your credit reports? I looked online, and there were so many different choices that it was hard to tell what was real.
Yeah, okay. Michelle, do you want to go back to that?
Yeah, one thing I would do is go right to the DADCAP website, and we have the information posted there as to the phone numbers you can call and the websites that you can go to. So our website is datcp.wi.gov. You will need to freeze your credit report with each of the three credit reporting agencies. You have to take three actions, so Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, because each one is going to validate that you are who you say you are, and they want, you know, you to prove that, so you're going to have to provide identity and documentation. Know that your Social Security number is involved with this. You're handing it over to the people who track everything through that Social Security number, so they need to validate your name and your number match and you are who you say you are. They're going to then issue you like a PIN and a password, so you can freeze and unfreeze your account as you need to for any extensions of credit that you're going to need to take out. So if this spring it's time to buy the camper or the boat, and you need a loan to do that, you'll work with your bank and say, okay, who are you checking my credit report against? And they may say TransUnion. You can use that PIN and password, thaw your credit report for that short period of time while they pull your credit report to give you that loan, and then freeze it back up. If they say, we don't know, you're going to have to thaw it for all three. All of that is free. The credit reporting agencies are doing that very quickly. They have criteria that they have to issue these things, thaw them, freeze them very fast within those windows of request. But go to our website. We have the base information as to where you go to connect with each one of them in order to start the process.
And that sort of relieves a person a little bit. A lot of people don't want to give out their Social Security number to somebody they don't know. But if they're going to those sites, those sites already have the information about your Social Security number, and they need to verify that you have that correct information.
And you are going there. You're not being directed there through a link or a phone call. You're initiating it. Make sure your computer's up to date before you go, and that it's HTTPS before you transmit any data electronically. And if you are going to go ahead and mail anything, you know, do so securely so you know it's arrived. Talk to the post office about that so things are able to be tracked and you know where they land.
Michelle Ryan, an executive policy advisor for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection and the director of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, Michael Domke, our guests today. Great to have them with us. I'm Larry Mueller. You can join in, by the way, the number to call 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@WPR.org. Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today, taking a look at consumer protection concerns with our two guests. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke, our guests from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. Lines are full right now, so we'll go to the phones. Dennis in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Thank you for calling, Dennis.
Good morning. I just had a question, and I'll take the answer off the air. But when you apply for a credit card or when you deal any dealings with Kohl's department store, they always want your Social Security number when you use their credit card and stuff. And I'm just wondering if they can, if they're allowed to use that for your Social Security number, or maybe they take your last four or something like that instead of your full Social Security number.
Okay. Michael, what do you think?
Well, it's not uncommon when applying for credit for these companies and businesses to ask for your social to verify your identity when doing so. So I wouldn't immediately be alerted or concerned if you have an established, reputable business that's asking for that, as it may be one of the required elements.
Okay. So, yeah. And Kohl's, obviously a business that's been in Wisconsin for a long, long time, maybe a business that that the caller had been dealing with. So. And you're doing it in person, too.
You hit on it. And one thing that Michelle had mentioned in the last segment is to make sure that you're proactively reaching out to Kohl's for that credit, and that it's not Kohl's soliciting, you know, that credit from you. Yeah. And being there in person adds even more legitimacy to it.
Jackie in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Jackie.
Hello there. How are you this afternoon?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Fantastic. Just want to give a heads up to anybody out there looking for a job, actively looking on any of the websites, Monster, Indeed, things of that nature. You open yourself up to so many calls to online education, insurance, everything. I said scam likely calls me more than my family.
Yeah, that may be true for a lot of people, Jackie. What do you think, Michelle?
Yeah, this is certainly a great advisory, and really appreciate her calling in with that. Lots of people are looking for jobs right now, the perfect job, if you will, that meets all their flexibility requirements and needs. But when you put your information out there, oodles, millions, I don't even know how many, can access all that information. And now they have access to contacting you and all the phone calls that they can make in the scams that they can try and present to you and see if you will fall for that. And we hear a lot about different fake job postings as well, where individuals are trying to obtain your information and your money. They try and entice you through the interview, say you got the job, go buy these things to set up your office using these links and contacts. And really, it's all part of the scam. Or they have you fill out all the forms to start the job, and you're handing over all your personal information as well. So you need to be very cautious when you post your information out there as a means of seeking employment and looking for employment as well.
Yeah. Amy from Milwaukee sent us an email and wonders, if your answering machine picks up the robocall, does that signal to the caller like a live person has engaged, or is it realized that an answering machine picked up the call? Or is it? Does it know right away that it's a here's a live call, a live phone number?
Yeah,
it's going to depend. Sorry, Michael. It's going to depend on the technology they're using to place the call as to how they're receiving that information back. But certainly, it gives a signal that a connection has been made if they're tracking it in such a manner. Michael, if there's anything additional.
No, that was it. It would depend on what they're using and also probably on their goal of whether or not they just want to validate a live line or if they're looking to see if they is a real person on the other side. So it depends on intent and technology.
And Michael, as long as you were just talking, let me go to you for this one. I know the department received almost 600 home improvement consumer complaints in 2021. That was one of the complaints on the top 10 list. What issue comes up with that?
Well, thanks, Larry. This is an interesting one. We had about a 15% increase in the number of complaints we received in 2021, which doesn't surprise us given the cost of building materials over the past year and a half. There was certainly a decline in the number of new homes or even remodeling because materials were so expensive. So as that has started to level back out, we're seeing an increased number of complaints coming in with home improvement contractors who are doing some of that work that homeowners want to do. One of the primary, I guess I would say, concerns we see with complaints being filed is the lack of really contractual issues. One of those being lien waivers and the lien language that state law requires beyond a contract. And what this means, and maybe a lot of first-time remodelers or builders aren't aware of, is if you fail to make your contractual payments and requirements, that contractor has the ability to put a lien against your home. And that can lead to some unintended consequences if you determine that you didn't want to pay something because you didn't like the quality of work, which is a separate issue. Unbeknownst to you, if that language isn't there, they might do some of these things that leave you, you know, with a problem. Another is, you know, failing to just do the work itself. It's surprising the number of complaints we would receive where a homeowner and a contractor agree to perform some type of remodel or put a fence up or redo the roof, and then the contractor just doesn't show up and do it, which, you know, seems kind of hard to believe, but happens more frequently than we would certainly like to see. That's something we can assist with. Again, also the types of materials, you know, that you agree to pay for, let's just say a slate roof, and you end up getting shingles, and that's not what you agreed to. Those are situations where they're trying to maybe cut corners, make a little bit of extra money. And if the homeowner's not paying attention to what they agreed upon in the contract, then they may not, you know, understand what they're losing out on. And then the time ties in with the most important aspect of a home improvement is the contract itself and making sure that everything that is agreed upon is documented somewhere. You may have an established relationship or somebody down the road had some work done and said, hey, they turned out great. And so you become trustworthy and you have an oral agreement. It's very difficult for our agency to help mediate those if there wasn't anything documented, because it's a he said, she said, and we weren't there to understand what was happened at the time. Make sure everything's down in writing. And then lastly is making sure you understand what you're getting. You know, the contracts can be just confusing. And if it's the first time you've ever done it, you may not know what all goes into a certain type of project you're doing. So understand what is being represented, understand what they're promising, and make sure you have a timeline of when they're going to do it, so you don't end up paying for a snow fence that's being put in June.
There you go. I can give one quick example of my own experience many years ago where I had some contractors involved taking the end of the house off to do an extension, and they took the end of the house off and put a tarp up, and then they were supposed to come back the next day to work on it, and like a week later, they still hadn't, and the cats were getting out of the house, and it was an absolute disaster for actually about 2 weeks.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, enough of that. Let's go to Heidi in Menominee. Hi, Heidi.
Hi. I am a provider, and I work with persons who not only have mental health that they're working through, but they typically have some type of high functioning but cognitive delay. And within that, I'm running into over and over scammers, especially online, that they go between online and then getting the information and phone calls, but they pose as famous people. whether they get the information, whether it be on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, that this person likes this performer or wants to become a singer or wants to become a basketball player. And people pose as either a manager or somebody who is able to help them get that book deal and we'll get your book published. And over, they are giving funds to the Bitcoin, to TransUnion, or not TransUnion, but they are sending money directly to them, or they are getting hooked into, if you put this money down on this gift card. And so there's no way of getting the money back. And I'm working with a number of individuals that this keeps happening over and over, and I will sit down with them and help them go through each one individually. But it takes a lot of time. It's really, really difficult to tell somebody who they think that their dream is coming true finally, and then that it isn't, and then it happens over and over, and they're losing thousands and thousands of dollars. Is there any resources out there to help?
Yeah. And here we are coming up to the hour. That is such a sad and terrible thing. And we're going to deal with that, Heidi. You can even stay online. We need to take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back to take up this dastardly issue with Heidi and with you. Stay with us. We'll be back right after the news. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at consumer issues with our guest from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michael Domke is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. So great to have both of them with us. I think there's one open line at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. When we broke for news, we had Heidi from Menominee with us. Heidi is a provider and a professional, and she works with cognitive delayed individuals, and those individuals are being scammed online. They wanted, the scammers are telling them they're famous people, that these individuals know and like, and they're taking money from them. Which is, I think, about the worst possible thing, one of the worst possible things you can do. And Heidi wonders what resources or what kind of help is out there for those individuals.
Thanks, Larry. Heidi actually hit on a couple of really great spots that we can both offer resources and help with. The first one she touched on, she mentioned Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and that's an area that is gaining momentum. And as we see this becoming somewhat legitimized throughout the world, the concern is it's not regulated yet. And so this becomes a great target and opportunity for criminals and scammers to use, where they can, you know, promise certain returns and how you're going to become a millionaire. And we see commercials like, I'm a millionaire and I'm not, and then I am and I'm not. And that type of endorsement we're seeing being done by celebrities. And of course, scammers take advantage of that. We see Tom Brady and Matt Damon endorsing these cryptocurrencies, and scammers take advantage of that trust and that, you know, quote, legitimacy in a variety of scams. And unfortunately, as Heidi perfectly laid out, most scammers and criminals don't have a conscience, and a victim is a victim. And so wherever they can try and get that return. Another, a scam that ties in with the crypto and this type of targeted population is payment in gift cards. And we're coming out of the holiday season, and there's always a spike in gift card scams, and because they're so popular, they're to be bought and given at that time. But this is something that we see certain groups, you know, being taken advantage of, where a scammer will say you must pay with a gift card. And it's very, very rare that you'll ever see a legitimate company, civic organization, utility, government say you must pay us in gift cards. But nonetheless, they make those attempts. And the reason they use those two forms of payment is because they're very, very difficult to track and recover. And so it's to their advantage to have those type of payments to fall back. We do have some resources, thankfully, that we can try and help both Heidi and any of the other listeners out there. The first is we have a resource guide, particularly targeted for a senior population that helps lay out both with graphics and a clear understanding of what these scams are, how the approach is, and what they can proactively look for to make sure they can prevent being victimized themselves. In addition, we have a variety of other fact sheets. These are resources on our website, atce.wi.gov, that will help educate on the variety of other scams and things taking place. And then lastly, Heidi mentioned she was a provider. We have a focused outreach program with dedicated liaisons where their only job is to get out there and help educate civic organizations, groups, even with providers or businesses to help educate, you know, our Wisconsin population on all of these things. And I would encourage anybody, providers or a member of these boards, to go ahead and access our website where you can request a free presentation, and we'll get out there and help share the message.
Heidi, I hope you can do that. Again, the address is datcp.wi.gov. Could she call as well, or anybody else call for that?
You bet. If you just call our hotline at 800-422-7128, and we'll be happy to set them up and put them in contact.
Heidi, thanks for all you do, and thank you so much for calling us today. Appreciate it very, very much. Let's go to Kurt in Oak Creek. Hi, Kurt.
Hello. I have relatives in Northwest Minnesota, and when I try and call them, there's their telephone company is Garden Valley, and I have to. There's a recording that says if you are prove you are not a robot and push 8, you have to push the number, and then your call will go through. So they get no scam calls on their landlines. I've asked my company to add this feature to my phone. I have an old flip phone, and they don't want to do it. And I'm sure there's pressure to from whoever to not let this happen. But that would really be a great nationwide fix to a lot of problems here to prove you're not a robot.
Yeah. Wow. What do you think of that, Michael?
I think it's an incredible tool. I wish more companies would be proactive and take approaches to put these type of measures in place to help stop it.
Yeah, it's is it something, Michelle, have you heard of any of this being discussed in Wisconsin?
I haven't heard about it in Wisconsin. It could be discussed within different companies or corporations as to how they want to proceed with that, and that could be their resolution, the Garden Valley's resolution for their authentication protocol that they just make people validate before the connection will happen or an additional service that could be available. I agree with Michael. It's great and like to see more of that personally.
There you go. Well, Kurt, keep after your company. I guess that's what... that's what people would have to do is call their provider and say, hey, this is going on in Minnesota. Why can't we have it for our service? Pete in Lancaster, your turn. Hi, Pete.
Hey, well, thanks for taking my call. I do appreciate it. My question centers around responding to a debt collector. The situation is this. I had some medical services done back in October of last year, and I never got a bill. And I called the provider several times to get a bill in the mail. What wound up happening is I got information from a bill collector saying I haven't paid the bill that I owed the service provider. So long story short, I talked to the service provider, cleaned everything up, but I'm still sitting with these, and they never did send the bill. Even today, I've never got the bill from them. But I'm sitting on some letters from the credit agency saying I need to respond. And my question is, the debt's been paid. The provider said they have pulled these back from the debt collector, but I have no proof of that. And so do I need to still respond to the debt collector saying, hey, I've paid these, and your request is no longer relevant, or do I just walk away from it and not get deeper involved in what's going on, I guess.
Michelle, what do you think?
I'm going to start this response with the Department of Financial Institution regulates debt collection in the state of Wisconsin. So they are the true experts on what is permitted and not permitted by debt collectors in our state. So you'll want to go to their website, Department of Financial Institutions for Wisconsin. You'll want to go there to contact individuals or look at the allowable practices. But I will also respond by saying I would engage in letting them know in writing that you have cleared this with the service provider. Copy the service provider when doing so, because you don't have any documentation to show that it's been cleared without having that bill or maybe that statement back from the provider that's saying all clear. To put a written path in place, if you will, to help track, because a debt collector can turn this over to a credit reporting agency and you don't want it appearing on that file. They should have, you know, particular standards that they have to meet in reporting debt, but you want to make sure you have something that you've started this process in writing. So I would let them know if they are legitimate debt collectors on this, and you verified with the provider they had turned this over, but now you've taken care of it, and that's who they turned it over to.
All right. Good luck, Pete. Thank you so much. Annette in Green Bay, let's go there. Hi, Annette.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for the call, the show. I was wondering about receiving emails essentially unsolicited from, say, Home Depot or Best Buy or somebody, and that they say, if you don't want to, and unsolicited, I said, and then they ask, if you don't want to receive these anymore, unsubscribe. And I'm wondering if you're better off just deleting it, or does unsubscribing make it better or worse to get more of those?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it, Michelle?
It is. And, you know, I have two answers to this question. The first is if you've ever engaged with them online or in any way that would make it legitimate emails that you're receiving. So if you've purchased something online, you know, anywhere throughout the year holiday, and maybe you forgot to click the button that says unsubscribe me from email list or advertisement lists, and you've done a purchase, then I have felt more confident in hitting unsubscribe because I know I have had a relationship online for them to legitimately have my information. However, if you've never engaged and have never purchased and you don't understand where these are coming from in any way, shape, or form, I would program my system to put these to junk and just let them go and just delete them or let them land in your junk box and ignore them, because they certainly could be spoofed emails asking you to unsubscribe. When you hit that button, there could be malicious software behind it. Or they could ask you to verify information in order to unsubscribe, and you'd be handing over stuff to this potential imposter emailer. So you need to balance your comfort in why you're receiving these.
Good luck, Annette. Thank you so much. Charles in La Crosse, we'll go to you now. Hi, Charles.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I did send in an email about this problem just a short time ago, but I guess I tried to call and I got through. I got a call the other day from people who said they were from Medicare and they were from Chicago, but my caller ID said they were from DeForest. I kept getting about three or four rings on the phone from the same place, and they started asking me my name and address and other personal information, and I didn't say yes or no. I just said, what else do you have? What else do you have? And then they asked me about a card, if I had a red and blue card with names and numbers on it and stuff like that. And I said, no, I just got this AARP card from Medicare, you know, Advantage Plan. But they kept asking me if I had this color card, and I kept saying, no, I don't have it, no, I don't have it. Now, I was wondering, because of all the personal information they already had, I mean, they were asking me my phone number, my address, and other information. And I was just wondering if they were trying to get my Social Security card. And if they know my birth date, what places can they go to get other information off of me, or banking information or tax information?
Yeah, there's a lot there, Michael.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Medicare and Medicaid fraud is something that we receive a lot of phone calls on every month. And, you know, Charles had touched on an area of if they have their phone number, a lot of times scammers will just have one or two pieces of information that they'll call on to add legitimacy to whoever they're trying to represent, and then want to start filling in the blanks on other information that they need. One thing that I would suggest to Charles or any of the listeners that encounter the same situation is if you start, you know, red flags are going up, or you don't think it seems right, or they're just out of the blue calling you and asking for a lot of information that they should have, but you think that there might be a reason that you might want to talk to them, just hang up and then call that particular agency or organization directly. You know, if you need to go online and find their phone number, but don't continue that phone call, but go to that reliable source. Call the number that you're either familiar with or that that particular agency advertises online, and then let them know, hey, you just reached out, you're asking for this information, and then they can, you know, either legitimize the need or tell you no as a scammer so you don't inadvertently share that information.
Let's take a call from Dan in La Crosse. Dan, hello.
Hello. I have an elderly friend who received a phone call requesting two $450 Walmart gift cards. And my friend went to Walmart and bought the cards and sent them to the person. It was a scam. And my concern is, I wish Walmart would have a prominent sign in their services department warning against scams like that. And I talked to the Walmart person, and she said, well, it was only $450 per card. I was outraged. And I would just appreciate your support to get this major company that does a lot of financial transactions to warn against people like that.
Yeah. Michelle, go ahead.
Yeah, so this is great, Dan. Thanks for bringing this scam up and the use of gift cards to make payments and, you know, people being called to just go buy some and ship them off or hand over the numbers on the back and the PIN. The last year for Consumer Protection Week in March of 2021, the agency, DADCAP, actually worked with a number of organizations, associations, the grocers, the petroleum marketers, and Walmart, and a few others as well, the medical society and stuff for that, like pharmacies, to put stickers out at the point of sale of gift cards. That is our Stop Gift Card Scam campaign. So certainly you can get a call Consumer Protection and have some of these stickers mailed to you, and you could take them into the store manager at Walmart and ask them to post those at the point of sale of the gift cards. We will say this, that Walmart, we did training with their staff specifically at all their stores, and actually they have their own signage and campaign. So it sounds like that location may have been missing that information. And so certainly doing a reminder with the store manager, if you can get to that level, a poke kind of that's missing, and asking them to reinstate that signage or certainly hand over our signage. And you can, with other retailers in your community, encourage their participation in this education campaign to just put an alert to people, because it really has a few bullets that reminds individuals, if you've been called out of the blue to purchase and send gift cards, this is a scam, you know, stop.
Yeah. And I did see a little article about a Walmart employee who was questioned a person who was getting trying to get gift cards, and actually educated that person. The person didn't buy the cards, and it was a good thing because it was a scam.
You're right. I've seen that story as well. That's great. And I will say, you know, the others, the Targets and other major large retailers as well, have had some of their own kind of promotional campaigns around this. So, and the Federal Trade Commission's also trying to work with some national retailers to really, at the point of sale, help get the message out.
Yeah. So, Dan, you might just go back to that store and maybe take some of those tags, or at least talk with them there about that information for sure. So you can be a little proactive on that. $450 is nothing to sneeze at. That's for sure. And I appreciate your call very much. Well, we've covered just about, there was buyers as scammers. You're starting to see scammers target sellers in online marketplace transactions. And maybe in the last minute or so, Michael, you can talk about that.
You bet. This was kind of a two-part scam, and we initially were seeing it universally buyers as scammers, where they would promote a certain product and they just never had it. You know, oftentimes we see those sporting tickets, and unfortunately the buyer pays them through some type of online app, and then the money's gone and they never get it. But what we're seeing now is a little bit kind of the next step after that, where they're reaching out, offering to buy a certain item, and then they're purporting to say, I want to verify that you're legitimate, because there's scammers out there. And so they set up usually a Google Voice account, and Google Voice, if they want to verify that phone number, will send a 4- or 6-digit PIN that says, hey, verify you're real. And then the buyer is saying, hey, I need to know what that number is. When they get that number, what they've done is they've created this Google Voice phone account with your phone number. And now you've just given them that PIN to enter that online. And the reason they want to do this is now they're going to take that and they're going to go out and they're going to scam hundreds of other people with your phone number. And so, unsuspecting to you, your phone number is being used and all these other new scams. So the takeaway here is, if you have someone or you're offering something online, and they're saying, hey, wait a second, I want you to verify with me on this Google Voice, that should be a red flag. You should be setting up your own Google Voice account and not sending those types of pins to other people.
You know, I wish I had everybody who's listening had a camera, could see my face as I was just shaking my head. It is amazing what, if those scammers would spend as much time on productive activity as they do, they could be really successful. I actually have come to believe that, but unfortunately they're not. And that's why it's so important to have you guys come by and be with us. I want to thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to your next visit in a couple of months. I think Thursday, April 7th is the next show. Michael and Michelle, thank you. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit. Michelle Ryden is the Executive Policy Advisor for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michael Domke is the Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. The emails and the phone numbers, tell you what, if you go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry, go to today's show. And go to the program notes for today's show, and we have all that information there for you. Appreciate their time very much, and your time as well. And don't forget tomorrow, Garden Talk. We'll talk about seed shortages and some newer seeds with Jer Gettles from Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.